Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome, and we are here from Reclaiming the Republic to help you with your news cycle addiction. We know that it's really hard for the average conservative to turn away from all of the tyranny, all of the communist crap that's being rammed down our throats, and how the blind eye by the media and blind eye by everybody seems to just be overwhelming. Well, we're here to help, and we're not from the government, because we're going to prove to you by going through and continuing through the ratification debates, we're going to prove to you that the Constitution was defined in such a way that there is no way the federal government, and actually those who are acting as public servants and bureaucrats and lawyers and judges that we call the federal government, are violating their oath. They have, and we have the power to remove them, and all we have to do is assert our power. And when I say we, our power, I am speaking of our state legislators. They have the power to do this. You're focused on the wrong spot. You're concentrating on the wrong things, but we're here to help. This show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence as well as the academic evidence-based solutions necessary in saving our Constitution and our Republic. We have a comment line. It's 425-270-5416. And we definitely want to make sure you feel more than welcome to become a part of the conversation. If you want to call that comment line, 425-270-5416, then you can initiate either dialogue or ask me a question. Or if it's that meaty of an issue, we'll call you up and we'll create an interview time for you. Anyway, what we want to do, because we've already kind of covered the big meaty ones, not the big meaty ones, actually the really sparse ones, Delaware, Georgia, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Maryland, Connecticut, just to give you an up-to-date what we've covered, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and South Carolina. We've even covered New York, and we actually proved to you that New York was really a lackluster ratification debate, considering Hamilton was a part of it, and we kind of explain why. We're going through North Carolina at this time. What I read out of the North Carolina debates is just really strong stuff. That's why it's basically second to last. It is one of the strongest ratification debates because the arguments by this time have been so strong that they've been able to... But here's the interesting thing. They were so strong, but the anti-federalist could not get persuaded to ratify the Constitution. They couldn't come up to a majority. They just couldn't get to the point of ratifying. So they chose to wait a year. And as soon as they came back into session a year later, boom, it was done. And they were moving forward to be ready to be a part of the second half of the very first legislative session of Congress. So anyway, what we are going to cover now is, because we just kind of ended with a comment that was done by Mr. McClain. And now we're going into a follow-on comment, because at this point, Mr. McClain was basically talking about no officer will be bound by his oath to support any act that would violate the principles of the Constitution. That's how we left it. And so he goes on and he dives into some even deeper issues regarding the Bill of Rights and enumerating powers. And he says, the gentleman has wandered well out of his way to tell us what has so often been said out of doors, that there is no Declaration of Rights, that consequently our rights are taken away. It would be a very extraordinary to have a Bill of Rights because the powers of Congress are expressly defined, and the very definition of them is as valid and efficacious a check as a Bill of Rights could be without the dangerous implications of a Bill of Rights. The powers of Congress are limited and enumerated. We say we have given them those powers, but we do not say we have given them more. We retain all those rights which we have not given away to the general government. The gentleman is a professional man. If a gentleman had made his last will and testament and devised or bequeathed to a particular person the sixth part of his property or any particular specific legacy, could it be said that that person should have the whole estate? If they can assume powers not enumerated, there was no occasion for enumerating any powers. The gentleman is learned without recurring to his learning. He may only appeal to his common sense. It will inform him that if we had all power before and gave away but a part, we still retain the rest. It is as plain a thing as possibly can be that Congress can have no power but what we expressly give them. There is an express... I'm going to stop right here. I want you to understand that as the states coalesce into Republic Review and the federal government, the court system, and everybody from the communist revolution is going to say, hey, we have these rights and powers. It doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't even matter if they have a piece of paper with somebody giving them the approval. The only thing that matters is if there's been a ratified amendment to the Constitution delegating those powers that they are claiming, such as the Department of Labor, the Department of Education, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Housing, and so forth, which there are no amendments, which means they are usurpations. Doesn't matter even if the states signed papers and said, we're going to let you do these things. If it's not done via the Article 5 process in delegating those powers formally, it is unconstitutional. That's it. And so the only judgment that matters is the states, because they are the parties to this compact. There is an express clause which, however disingenuously it has been perverted from its true meaning, clearly demonstrates that they are confined to these powers which are given them. This clause enables them to, quote, make all powers which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or officers thereof, close quote, which means that they can only carry out the execution of the foregoing powers by making laws to do so. They can't make laws to usurp powers and be able to carry those out. Well, they can. They're getting away with it because we've been duped into letting them. It is a house of cards. It is unconstitutional. This clause, this necessary and proper clause that I just read, this clause specifies that they shall make laws to carry into execution all the powers vested by this Constitution. Consequently, they can make no laws to execute any other power. This clause gives no new power, but declares that all those already given are to be executed by proper laws, and I hope this will satisfy the gentleman. Now, Mr. Johnston gets up. He's the governor again. And he gets into this conversation as well. Mr. Chairman, the learned member from Anson says that the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction in all cases in law and equity under this Constitution and laws of the United States. The opinion which I have always entertained is that they will, in these cases, as well as in several others, have concurrent jurisdiction with the states and not exclusive jurisdiction. I have seen nothing in this Constitution which hinders a man from bringing suit whatever he thinks he can have justice done him. The jurisdiction of these courts is established for some purposes. I'll take a quick pause here and editorialize. You do realize that there have been nefarious plays by lawyers and activists to move into the federal court to get the federal court to assume jurisdiction. Now, when they assume jurisdiction, does that mean that's legitimate jurisdiction? No. The problem is that the people who are on the other side of that suit chose not to question the jurisdiction because everybody just believes that the federal government has jurisdiction over everything. That's been our mistake. It is a mistake for anyone to go into a court of law in the federal court when it is a matter that they have no jurisdiction over. Anytime you step into a court, to a court that has no jurisdiction over the matter, you have lost already. It's that simple. Anyway, with which the state courts have nothing to do, and the Constitution takes no power from the state courts, which they have now. They will have the same business which they have now, and if so, they will have enough to employ their time. We know that the gentlemen who preside in our superior courts have more business than they can determine. Their complicated jurisdiction and the great extent of country occasions them a vast deal of business. The addition of the business of the United States would be no manner of advantage to them. It is obvious to everyone that there ought to be one Supreme Court for national purposes. But the gentlemen say that a Bill of Rights was necessary. Now, we'll take a pause here and we'll pick it right up where we left off so that we can dive into more of this jurisdiction, enumeration of powers, and so forth as good Governor Johnston dives into this. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
If it has not dawned on you at this point, maybe it should, that the Supreme Court is not the final arbiters when it comes to violations of the Constitution and what the federal government can be doing and what they can't be doing. This all falls onto the shoulders of the states. The states have all the power to come to the federal government and say, show us the amendment that granted you this power. Because there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows the court system to change the Constitution. There is no allowance in the Constitution for Congress or even the President to delegate new powers, to be able to change jurisdictions. That can only come from former delegated powers through an amendment of the Constitution. And the states have the high ground. They are the parties to it. And when we get into the resolutions of Kentucky and Virginia, which is going to be coming up after we do these ratification debates and a few other things, you will find just how much power the states really have over this. Anyway, Mr. Johnson, or Governor Johnson, goes on and says, "It appears to me, sir, that it would have been highest absurdity to undertake to define what rights of the people of the United States were entitled to, for that would be as much as to say they were entitled to nothing else. A Bill of Rights may be necessary in a monarchical government whose powers are undefined. Were we in the situation of a monarchical country? No, sir. Every right could not be enumerated, and the omitted rights would be sacrificed if security arose to the enumeration. Now look at us today. They have no right to take away our right of commerce, our right of assembly, our right of religious worship, and they're doing it. And people are just allowing this to happen. The Congress, going on, Governor Johnson says, the Congress cannot assume any other power than those expressly given them without a palpable violation or a blatant violation of the Constitution. Such objections as this, I hope, will have no effect on the minds of any members in this House. When gentlemen object, generally, it tends to consolidate the states and destroy their state judiciaries. They ought to be explicit and explain their meaning. They make use of contradictory arguments. The Senate represents the states and can alone prevent this dreaded consolidation. Yet the powers of the Senate are objected to. The rights of the people, in my opinion, cannot be affected by the federal courts. I do not know how inferior courts will be regulated. Some suppose that the state courts will have this business. Others have imagined that the continuant would be divided into a number of districts where the courts would be held so as to suit the convenience of the people. Whether this or some other mode would be appointed by Congress, I know not. But this I am sure, that of the state judiciaries are not divested of their present cognizance, and that we have every security that our ease and convenience will be consulted. Unless Congress had this power, their laws could not be carried into execution." Now, I want to just say this, that when we look at the federal court system and as it sits currently, I believe there needs to be a dialogue after Republic Review and after we start looking, and as the states are basically, you know, they completed the closing down of all of these unconstitutional powers and spending by the federal government. We have sent a message to the world that says, you have been culpable if you came to America and bought debt that was unconstitutional. Your hands possess the same blood that those lawmakers have possessed. Now, I am here to tell you that a part of this process has to be everybody that willingly extended spending money unconstitutionally from Congress and from the court systems, as well as from the bureaucracies. All of these people are culpable in this fraud. And so they should be removed. They should be banned for life from public service. And as countries come along and say, hey, we don't buy into this. We want to prosecute you. And we will send them Pelosi. We will send them all of these corrupt politicians and bureaucrats that were involved in duping them if they really believe they were duped. You got to remember that the buyer beware. It is the due diligence of the buyer to ensure that they're buying into a contract that is valid. And if they're ignorant on the U.S. Constitution, just like the American people are, they're equally at fault. Now, Mr. Bloodworth, an anti-federalist, pipes up and he says, "Mr. Chairman, the word of the gentleman up last has given me information on the subject which I have never heard before." In other words, he's kissing the governor's butt. "Hearing so many opinions, I did not know which was right. The honorable gentleman has said that the state courts and the courts of the United States would have concurrent jurisdiction. I beg the committee to reflect that what would be the consequence of such measures? It has been considered that the trial by jury was one of the greatest rights of the people. I ask whether, if such cases or causes go into the federal court, the trial by jury is not cut off, and whether there is any security that will have justice done us. Now, just to be clear, the only crime that the federal court has jurisdiction over is treason or currency or the false printing of money. What is that? Counterfeiting. And then crimes against the laws of nations, which is outside the United States, and crimes committed on the high sea, which again is outside the United States. So what crimes would somebody be needing a trial by jury other than for treason? And I believe treason would be a trial by jury. But anyway, he's right that at the point of the Constitution, at this point, it does not establish common law as the law of the land. That happens with the Bill of Rights. I ask if there be any security that we shall have juries in civil causes. Well, there's only two civil causes that would be applicable. In criminal cases, there are to be juries there, but there is no provision made for having civil causes trialed by jury. And as a matter of fact, there's very few civil causes that the federal government would have jurisdiction over. This concurrent jurisdiction is inconsistent with the security of that great right. If it be not, I wish to hear how it would be secured. I have listened with attention to what the learned gentlemen have said and have endeavored to see whether these arguments had any weight, but I found none in them. Many words have been spoken and long time taken up, but with me, they have gone in one ear and out the other. And there's a reason for that, Mr. Bloodworth. It would give me much pleasure to hear that the trial by jury was secured. Anyway, here's the anti-federalist Mr. McDowell stepping up and saying, Mr. Chairman, the objections to this part of the Constitution have not been answered to my satisfaction yet. We know that the trial by jury of the vicinage is one of the greatest securities for property. If causes, now, what jurisdiction of crime does the federal government have over property? None. If causes are to be decided at such a great distance, the poor will be oppressed in land affairs, particularly the wealthy suitor will prevail. A poor man who has has a just claim on a piece of land has not substance to stand it. Can it be supposed that any man of common circumstances can stand the expense and trouble of going from Georgia to Philadelphia, there to have a suit tried? And can it be justly determined without the benefit of a trial by jury? These are things which have justly alarmed the people. What make the people revolt from Great Britain? The trial by jury, that great safeguard of liberty, was taken away and a stamp duty was laid upon them. This alarmed them and led them to fear the greater oppressions would take place. We then resisted. It involved us in a war and caused us to relinquish a government which made us happy in everything else. The war was very bloody, but we got our independence. We are now giving away our dear bought rights. We ought to consider what we are about to do before we determine. Mr. Spate gets up and says, Mr. Chairman, the trial by jury was not forgotten in the convention. The subject took up considerable time to investigate it. It was impossible to make any one uniform regulation for all the states, or that would include all cases it would be necessary. It was impossible by one expression to embrace the whole. There are a number of equity and maritime cases in some of the states in which jury trials are not used. Had the convention had said that had all causes should be tried by jury, equity and maritime cases would have been included. It was therefore left to the legislature to say in what cases it should be used. And as the trial by jury is in force in the state courts, we have the fullest security. Now, Mr. Iredell steps up and talks about amendments and common law and so forth. And he says, "Mr. Chairman, I have waited a considerable time in hopes that some other gentleman would fully discuss this point. I conceive it to be my duty to speak on every subject whereon I think I can throw any light. And it appears to me that some things ought to be said which no gentleman has yet mentioned. The gentleman from New Hanover said that our arguments went in one ear and out the other. This..." And I will tell you that my snarky response would be, well, that's just because he lacks something between those ears. That's why the sound just travels from one end to the other. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
And so Mr. Iredell goes on and says, "This sort of language on so solemn and important an occasion gives me pain." And in the background, Mr. Bloodworth declared, because they captured that, they put this in here in italicized, you know, lettering, he declared that he did not mean to convey any disrespectful idea by such an expression, that he did not mean an absolute neglect of their argument, but that they were not sufficient to convince him that he should be sorry to give pain to any gentleman, that he had listened and still would listen with attention to what would be said. And then Mr. Iredell continued and said, "I am by no means surprised at the anxiety which is expressed by gentlemen on this subject. Of all the trials that ever were instituted in the world, this is my opinion is the best, and that which I hope will continue the longest. If the gentleman who composed the convention had designedly omitted it, no man would be more ready to condemn their conduct than myself. But I have been told that the omission of it arose from difficulty of establishing one uniform, unexceptionable mode. This mode of trial being different in many particulars in the several states, gentlemen will be pleased to consider that there is a material difference between an article fixed in the Constitution and a regulation by law. An article in the Constitution, however inconvenient it may prove by experience, can only be altered by altering the Constitution itself, which manifestly is a thing that ought not to be done often. And I have to take a pause right here, because this one sentence is that powerful. An article in the, so I want you to understand that they made changes to our Electoral College. We went through this during the election, that they have no authority to touch the Constitution without amending it. They can't change a word, an iota of the Constitution. It must follow as read. And if you read the clauses on the Electoral College, you will find that we are not following that, that they have allowed the parties, the Democrat and Republican parties, to abscond the electors, and we the people are no longer selecting our electors. We're basically been taught and brought into this concept of a democratic process of majority rules instead of a representative government, that each congressional district is allowed to select their elector and each state is allowed to select two electors. Now, whether those two electors for the state be by, and let's just call it at large, so that everybody gets to vote for who they choose for the two electors for the state, but nobody will lose their representation of their elector in their congressional district. But this repugnant concept of you know, the winner takes all, the winner of the popular vote takes away your representation, is unconscionable. Are you kidding me? What happened to our Republican form of government and our representation? As you understand what he just said here, this is written into stone now. This is a term and definition of the Constitution that is immutable. It is irrefutable. An article in the Constitution, however inconvenient it may prove by experience, can only be altered by altering the Constitution itself, which manifestly is a thing that ought not to be done often. I want you to understand that the 17th Amendment is violating the Constitution, Article 5, in the Amendment Protection Clause. Go read the very last sentence of Article 5. No state shall lose its suffrage without its consent. There are seven states out there that never ratified the 17th Amendment, and they are being forced to lose their suffrage in the Senate. And I'm here to tell you that that in itself is a violation of the Constitution. When the problem is, the people who wrote the 17th Amendment had no clue that that was even in Article 5. Too many people are getting involved in writing amendments to the Constitution which do not understand the body and text of the Constitution. And so that's why we're in this huge quagmire. Anyway, Mr. Iredell goes on, and I'll tell you what, he's one of my favorites when it comes down to the ratification debates and providing the insights. Mr. Iredell is top-notch. When regulated by law, so after he says, and it's something that not ought to be done in in amending the Constitution, he goes on and says, when regulated by law, it can easily be occasionally altered so as best to suit the conveniences of the people. Had there been an article in the Constitution taking away that trial, it would justly have excited the public indignation. It is not taken away by the Constitution. Though that does not provide expressly for a trial by jury in cases, it does say that there shall not be such a trial. The reasons of the omission have been mentioned by a member of the late General Convention, Mr. Speight. There are different practices in regard to this trial in different states. In some cases, they have no juries in admiralty and equity cases. In others, they have juries in these cases, as well as in suits at common law. I beg leave to say that if any gentleman of ability and knowledge of the subject will only endeavor to fix upon one rule that will be pleasing to all states under the impression of their present different habits, he will be convinced that it would be impracticable. If the practice of any particular state had been adopted, others probably whose practice had been different would have been discontented. This is a consequence that naturally would have been ensued, and the provision had been made in the Constitution itself. But when the regulation is to be by law, as that law, when found injudicious, injudicious, can be easily repealed. Sometimes you just get that word and it just trips you up. Anyway, can be easily repealed, a majority may be expected to agree upon some method, since some method or other must be first tried, and there is a greater chance of the favorite method of one state being in time preferred. It is not to be presumed that the Congress would dare to deprive the people of this valuable privilege. Their own interests will operate as an additional guard, as none of them could tell how soon they might have occasion for such a trial themselves. The greatest danger from ambition is in criminal cases, but here they have no option. The trial must be by jury in the state wherein the offense is committed, and the writ of habeas corpus will in the meantime secure the citizens against arbitrary imprisonment, which has been the principal source of tyranny in all ages. As to the clause respecting cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of the Union, which the honorable member objected to, it must be observed that the laws are useless unless they are executed. At present, Congress have powers. Can they execute? Can they not execute? After making laws which affect the dearest interest of the people in the constitutional mode, they have no way of enforcing them. The situation of those gentlemen who have lately served in Congress must have been very disagreeable. Congress have power to enter into negotiations with foreign nations, but cannot compel the observance of the treaties they make. They have been much distressed by their inability to pay the pressing demands of the public creditors. They have been reduced so low as to borrow principal to pay interest. Such are the unfortunate consequences of this unhappy situation. These are the effects of the pernicious mode of requisitions. Has any state fully paid its quota? I believe not, sir, yet I am far from thinking that this has been owing altogether an unwillingness to pay debts. It may have been in some instances the case, but I believe not in all. Our state legislature has no way of raising any considerable sums but by laying direct taxes. Other states have imports of consequence. They may afford them a considerable relief, but our state perhaps cannot have raised its full quota by direct taxes without imposing burdens too heavy for the people to bear. Suppose in this situation, Congress had proceeded to enforce their requisitions by sending an army to collect them. What would have been the consequence? Civil war, in which the innocent must have suffered with the guilty? Those who were willing to pay would have been equally distressed with those who were unwilling. Requisitions thus have failed of their purpose. It is proposed by this Constitution that instead of collecting taxes by the sword, application shall be made by the government to the individual citizens. If any individual disobeys the courts of justice, can give immediate relief. This is the only natural and effectual method of enforcing laws. As to the danger of concurrent jurisdictions, has any inconvenience resulted from the concurrent jurisdictions in sundry cases of the superior and county courts of the state? The inconvenience of attending at a great distance, which has been much objected to, is one that would be so general. And we'll take a pause right there. As you can tell, this was a really long and meaty debate. And Mr. Iredell, as far as I'm concerned, he just squared on that ball and hit it out the park. It's baseball time. Even though I don't watch it, I did love baseball, and it's really sad to see what the communists have done to this country and our heritage. But anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, and so let's continue where Mr. Iredell, or where we kind of stopped. And so let me read the beginning of this sentence, this last sentence we dove into. The inconvenience of attending at a great distance, which has been so much objected to, is one which would be so general that there is no doubt but that a majority would always feel themselves and their constituents personally interested in preventing it. I have no doubt, therefore, that proper care will be taken to lessen this evil as much as possible, and in particular that an appeal to the Supreme Court will not be allowed but in cases of great importance where the object may be adequate to the expense. The Supreme Court may possibly be directed to sit alternatively in different parts of the Union. And he kind of just throws that out there, but that's just because they really haven't set up how the court and the appeals process was going to be made. You know, they didn't even have the first Judiciary Act until Congress met. So anyway, as we move on through the ratification debates, the next issue comes up with Mr. Davey regarding jurisdiction. And he says this, and actually this is like Tuesday, July 29th. So we've gone into a new day now, and this is where Mr. Davey speaks. It is necessary in all governments, but particularly in a federal government, that its judiciary should be competent to the decision of all questions arising out of the Constitution. If I understand the gentleman right, his objection was not to define jurisdiction, but to the general jurisdiction, which is expressed thus, quote, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. The laws of the United States, and treaties made, or which shall be made under their authority, close quote. And also the appeal of jurisdiction in some instances. Every member who has read the Constitution with attention must observe that there are certain fundamental principles in it, both of a positive and negative nature, which being intended for the general advantage of the community ought not to be violated by any future legislation of the particular states. Every member will agree that the positive regulations ought to be carried into execution, and that the negative restrictions ought not to be disregarded or violated without a judiciary, and injunctions of the Constitution may be disobeyed, and the positive regulations neglected or contravened. There are certain prohibitory provisions in this Constitution, the wisdom and propriety of which must strike every reflecting mind, and certainly meet with the warmest approbation of every citizen of this state. It provides that, quote, no state without the consent of Congress lay any imposts or duties or imports or exports except when they may be absolutely necessary for executing the inspection laws, that no preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, that no state shall emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto laws, or law impairing the obligation of contracts. These restrictions ought to supersede the laws of particular states. With respect to the prohibitory provision that no duty or impost shall be laid by any particular state which is so highly in favor of us, and that other non-importing states, the importing states, might make laws laying duties notwithstanding, and the Constitution might be violated with impunity if there were no power in the general government to correct and counteract such laws. This great object can only be safely and completely obtained by the instrumentality of the federal judiciary. How about that for a word? Instrumentality. Would not Virginia, who has raised many thousand pounds out of our citizens by her imposts, still avail herself to the same advantage if there were no constitutional power to counteract her regulations? If cases arising under the Constitution were left out of her court, her own courts, might she not still continue the same practices? But we are now to look for justice to controlling the power of a judiciary of the United States. If the Virginians were to continue to oppress us by laying duties, we can be relieved by a recurrence to the general judiciary. This restriction in the Constitution is a fundamental principle which is not to be violated, but which would have been a dead letter were there no judiciary constituted to enforce obedience to it. Paper money and private contracts were in the same condition. Without general controlling judiciary, laws might be made in particular states to enable citizens to defraud the citizens of other states. It is probable of a citizen of South Carolina owed a sum of money to a citizen of this state, that the latter would be certain of recovering the full value in their courts, that the state might in future, as they have already done, make pine barren acts to discharge their debts. They might say that our citizens should be paid in sterile, inarable lands at an extravagant price. They might pass the most iniquitous installment laws, procrastinating the payment of debts due to their citizen for years, nay, for ages. It is probable that we should get justice from their own judiciary, who might consider themselves obliged to obey the laws of their own state. Where then are we to look for justice to the judiciary of the United States? Gentlemen must have observed that the contracted and narrow-minded regulations of the individual states and their predominant disposition to advance the interests of their own citizens to the prejudice of others, will not these evils be continued if there be no restraint? The people of the United States have one common interest. They are all members of the same community and ought to have justice administered to them equally in every part of the continent. in the same manner with the same dispatch and on the same principles. It is therefore absolutely necessary that the judiciary of the Union should have jurisdiction in all cases arising in law and equity under the Constitution. Surely there should be someone, surely there should be somewhere a constitutional authority for carrying into execution constitutional provisions. Otherwise, as I have already said, they would be a dead letter. With respect to their having jurisdiction in all cases arising under the laws of the United States, although I have very high respect for the gentleman, I heard his objection to it with surprise. I thought if there were any political axiom under the sun, it must be that the judicial power ought to be coextensive with the legislative. The federal government ought to possess the means of carrying into the means of carrying the laws into execution. This position will not be disputed. A government would be a filo de se to put the execution of its laws under the control of any other body. If laws are not to be carried into execution by the interposition of the judiciary, how is it to be done? And so I kind of think we can close right there on what he's saying regarding how the system is to work and how they're actually going to be benefiting from this. Now, Mr. Iredell then kind of comes in and he starts talking because it goes back and forth between McLean, Spencer, McLean, Iredell, Bloodworth, Spencer, Locke, and now Iredell. So at this point, there seems to be less and less objections from the anti-federalists because it seems that the federalists are speaking back to back, such as McLean, Spencer, McLean, and then Iredell. So we've got McLean and Iredell that are talking about and supporting the Constitution. Anyway, so this is what Mr. Iredell has to say. We have been told, and I believe this was the real reason why they could not concur in any general rule. I have great respect for the characters of those gentlemen who have formed the convention, and I believe they were not a cabal overlooking the importance of the trial by jury, much less of designedly plotting against it. But I fully believe that the real difficulty of the thing was the cause of the omission. I trust sufficient reasons have been offered to show, that it is of no danger as a criminal, as to criminal cases. I must observe that the great instrument of arbitrary power of criminal prosecutions, by the privilege of habeas corpus, no man can be confined without inquiry if it should appear that he has committed contrary to the law, he must be discharged. That diversity, which is to be found in civil controversies, does not exist in criminal cases. That diversity, which contributes to the security of property in cases, would have pernicious effects in criminal ones. There is no safe mode to try these by jury. If any man had the means of trying another of his own way, or were it left to the control of arbitrary judges, no man would have the security for life, liberty, which every freeman ought to have. And so we will leave it right there with that, and we will pick up in our next episode the remaining portion of Mr. Iredell's statement, because this is where he gets into really good stuff. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.